Welcome to Raising Playful Tots. Raising Playful Tots is a weekly podcast about mums making the most of early years playtime. My name is Melitza and I'm your host. Welcome to the Play Space. It's here that we focus on play that we want to see and experience in our homes. We cover play-related topics to inspire, teach, challenge, and lead us to have a great time with these kids of ours that we have. You have young children under 5 years old? This is the podcast for you. Introduce a new play idea. Welcome to Raising Playful Tots, show number 57. Thanks for listening to the show today. If you're new here, welcome, and hi to the regular playmates. Plenty of room in the log pile over here. Last podcast, I interviewed Adele Crozier, author of Sensory Activities for Babies and Toddlers, about becoming a childminder, transitioning from work to home, and I also ran a contest to receive Adele's book. There's still some time left on that, so if you missed that one, pop on over to the blog where you can listen to that show and find the archive of all the shows at raisingplayfultots.com/shows. This week's show is an interview with the educator Mara Kaplan about accessible playgrounds. From the first moments we reach a playground, we can quickly see if this is going to be a good experience for our children. How accessible is the playground for different combinations of users, and what can we do about it? I'll be right back after this short break.
Okay, forest animals, today is a new day. Kids are coming to the forest, and it's up to us to make their visit a good one. Sparrow.
Yes?
Have you practiced the most popular bird songs for the year?
Of course.
Catchy. I like it. Okay, river.
Dude.
How's the temperature?
It's a refreshing 52 degrees, man. Perfect for a little riverside shoeless relaxation.
Ah, good. Owl, you here?
Of course.
Who's asking? I am. Look, you know the drill. Sleep during the day, scare the kids at night.
Perfect. I love my job.
Oak tree?
Sup?
Still in the same place I left you last year. That's what I like. Consistency.
Well, it's not like I'm going anywhere for the next couple hundred years.
I know. I love it. Turtle. Turtle.
He's not here yet, man.
He's late every morning. You'd think he would have learned by now to leave the night before our meetings. Okay. Squirrel. Has anybody seen Mr. Squirrel?
The forest has been preparing just for you. Visit a forest near you today. To learn more about cool things to do in the forest, visit discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Today I'm talking to Mara Kaplan, educator, a parent of a child with disabilities, and a seasoned advocate of inclusive play. She founded an indoor play space for children with and without disabilities and was its executive director for over 13 years. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Last time we spoke, it was about 50 toys in 50 days, where you shared your knowledge about the best toys in the run-up to Christmas. So if you want to learn more about how to make good toy choices and to help you raise a playful tot, then you should see show number 2. And I mentioned that very briefly at the very end of that show that you do so many other things as well. You wear many hats, as we say.
I do wear many hats.
And one of the things that we talked very briefly was about playground accessibility, and I'd like to talk about that today. As parents, we all love playgrounds, and they are very diverse spaces. I think most of us can assess pretty quickly as we come upon a playground if it will work for our set of children. This really starts to matter when we have children of multiple ages or children with disabilities. So, Mara, can you tell us 3 things families say are the most important about a playground being accessible?
It is very clear what the top 3 issues are. One is the surfacing needs to be not loose fill. It needs to be the pour in place or tiles or turf, because as soon as you get that loose fill, your wheelchair is getting stuck in it. Or if you've got a child with a developmental disability, they could still be in a mouthing stage and they're putting engineered wood fiber in their mouth and that's not anything any mother wants to have happen. So the number one issue to make an accessible playground is the surfacing. The second is a fence, or it doesn't necessarily have to be a fence. It could be landscape barrier. Talk about kids of ages. Just like you have kids with disabilities, you can't always see them all at the same time because they're playing in different places. And having a fence gives you a feeling of some sort of security that there's only a sort of one place to go in and out. Children with autism often are runners. They get into a flight mode because they get scared of something or they get overwhelmed, and they can run really fast without a parent knowing. Many parents who are raising children with autism will not go to a playground. And the third one is swings. I love, everybody loves swings. And swings provide emotion that is essential for the development of a child's sensory system. And disabilities, often there's sensory systems is more impaired and even more important. So those are my three things.
Why is it important to look beyond wheelchairs when designing an accessible playground then?
Look at the actual statistics of children with only about 1-2% of children use a wheelchair. And often when we're designing accessible grounds, we spend all of our money and time designing it for the children who are using wheelchairs. We put big long ramps in for them to get up onto the structures. Ramps don't have a lot of play value. So there's 98% other kids who have disabilities who may require other types. So we want to make sure putting motion activities in, auditory activities, social activities, a toy on the ground that has a back for further support, opportunities to support all children without spending all of your money on it.
I think you hit the nail on the head there with how we tend to focus on children with disabilities as children that have able body issues, and autism and developmental delays are, it seems, I don't have any statistics, but seems as if that's becoming a larger and larger group of children. And certainly when you go with your sibling who could have a developmental delay or autism, you want to be able to play on the same types of equipment and feel the same security, the same safety, and be able to have fun in the playground. Well, like you said in the previous question, that's pretty difficult if you know that you can't leave one child because you're playing with the other, but you can see them because they might run off, or that they can't access something because they really need that motion and there just aren't enough swings, or there aren't enough activities that can provide that motion. It must be really quite frustrating.
I listened to a video recently of a mom who had designed a new accessible playground, and she said she did it because when her child was born, she then watched children play, and she sat there and cried because she knew that her child could never play at the playground. And we all have visions of what we're going to do with our children when they're born, and the exciting things we're going to do, and playgrounds are always up there on the top of the list. And so the thought that you can never go to a playground because your wheelchair can't get this. Your child's autism will be automatically overstimulated because it's not well designed, or because your child with developmental delays can't climb the structures as they're designed, you know, can be devastating to a parent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So from that lady, what are the best pieces of equipment on the market do you think there are to support inclusion and children with disabilities on the playground?
There are some really great new products. There's a product that is an electronic game. And I don't want anyone to start saying, wait, we're trying to get kids out, electronics. What this is a big, huge running game. And the lights light up and you have to run and hit your color lights. And I found that 80-year-olds can play this game. 2-year-olds can play this game. The children in a wheelchair can act and read. I've seen children with autism play on it. It is just an completely inclusive activity that is really wonderful. It's just great. And people stand on the outside and they cheer. And so, you know, children who never, sort of high fives are getting people cheering for them. So it's really wonderful. Another piece of equipment that multiple companies now have is a glider. And this glider is accessible to people. So you can roll up into the glider. The glider fits 10, 15 people, and it moves back and forth. So movement is so key for children with disabilities, and this creates a social atmosphere. It creates a motion event that a child in a wheelchair can use without having to be transferred out of their wheelchair. And if they have upper body strength, they can actually use their own body to help it move. I keep talking about motion because motion is so important, and multiple coming out with just some really exciting motion act. Other companies are coming out with very exciting sensory activities. One company, Sensory Wall, that has marbles in it that you can feel, and other tactile things, and music, and all sorts of things that make it a really great tactile auditory as well as social activity. Lots of people have added splash pads to their playground, which is a way to add water. And kids love playing in water. Disability or not, adding water to the playground is just a really wonderful piece. So we're really beginning to see 2 to 4 playground manufacturers really looking at the needs of children with disabilities and really listening to parents and coming up with some really great products.
Today, I'm talking to Mara Kaplan, nationally recognized expert in play and play spaces. She's a seasoned advocate for inclusive play. Well, you know, we've been talking about play and being out on the playground and trying to find an opportunity for everybody to be able to play. We touched very briefly on it just now, how frustrating it must be to visit a playground only to discover that your able-bodied child can play, but your child with disabilities can't manage much of the equipment. If only it was a little lower, if it was higher, wider, etc. I feel the same way when I have different age children, and I wish that, you know, the playgrounds had different levels built in for my toddler so that they can play right here and my school age children can play over there, because, you know, we all need challenging. What has been your experience of playgrounds?
Well, I recently went to look for pictures of my typically developing child on a playground. And I couldn't find any. And I realized I never took her to a playground. And that's that's a slight exact, but I couldn't take both my kids to the playground.
Mm-hmm.
The surfacing wasn't right. My son, who's in a wheelchair, way sort of outside of the playground. And then I've got this three-year-old running around. So I'm leaving him totally alone because my three-year-old is attempting the structure, which she was quite capable of doing with some support.
Yeah.
But I had to be right there with her. And he's sitting so far away from us. And that was really frustrating. I think finding that companies are is that they are creating what we graduated challenge. So that they are starting with very simple challenges and as a child grows can get more and more, because on the other end of the spectrum we are getting, you know, 10 and 11 year olds who have conquered the playground and don't necessarily want to go, and we have this whole obesity crisis and lack of exercise for the tweens and the teens. We need to continue making playground equipment that continue to challenge them. So we need this graduated challenge all the way from three-year-olds up to 15-year-olds. And therefore, if you have a developmental disability, someplace within that graduated challenge that is appropriate for that child with developmental disabilities to play.
Yeah, I love the way that companies are beginning to see what everybody else is doing, and the whole process is beginning to change. So let's dream a little now. If you could design your own playground, and I'm sure you've done it just like I have, you know, when you've gone to the playground, you've thought, what could I change here? If they just did this, that would have been so much better. You know, if you could design your own playground, what would you have? And what would you consider?
Well, I would get rid of the post and platform in a lot of the playgrounds. I would have a bunch of new standalone challenging climbers. So I would put the standalone climbers to create that challenge. I would integrate nature right into the playground. I might have a nature, which is a slide that's built right into the hillside. So then, you know, you can down the hill in addition to going down the slide. Mm. I, of course, would have swings. I would have it circular because there's something about circles that say this is inclusive without actually saying it.
Yes.
I play and sand play. I have tons of other ideas of what I would have in this playground. Have pretend play and good child play. And most importantly, it would have great line of sight so that you could be with your three-year-old and see your six-year-old no matter where they are on the playground.
Oh, that is a beautiful thought, a line of sight. The amount of times I feel I'm dodging around things to just see where the kids are and be able to find where they are. Yeah, I think that would be, that's gone to my number one.
and that's part of the problem with these posts and platform is the posts create so many barriers for kids. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons that I would, you know, sort of get away from that, as well as the idea of, I think there's other things that people can do without wasting the money, and we can spend more money on play value for all children.
Yeah. I think this would be a really good question for the week. So listeners, what would you have on your dream playground? Post your idea on our Facebook page or call in your answers on our voicemail number. I'll share your ideas on the show. I'll give you all the details of how to do this later on in the show. So now we're all fired up with all these ideas, Mara, about how to make an amazing, accessible playground in our area. So how do we actually get this going? How do we get one started? Is it an easy thing to do?
Yes and no. The easy thing to do is to start finding other people like you who want to create something really unique so that you're not doing it by yourself. Because as soon as you take this on by yourself, and I've seen multiple mothers, some tends to be moms, who, you know, take on these projects totally by themselves. And eventually, you know, they're committee members, but in the meantime, they start to get burnt out on this, on their own dream. So find like-minded people. Then resign the yourself to the fact your committee and other people that you find are going to have to raise them. At which point you can go to your municipality and say, hey, isn't a new playground or any playground, would you give us the land and provide the maintenance if we raise the money to build the playground?
Right.
And that's the best way to get the land for the playground and a commitment that it's going to be maintained after you're finished.
Right.
Then the next step, or some step in between that, is not to go to a playground rep and get stuck with necessarily one playground piece of equipment. You're trying to create a play environment that might have lots of nature involved, that may have unique pieces of equipment. You may decide to find a local art, help create your fence by creating this neat mosaic. So what you want to find next is a designer, a landscape architect who can work with you, and that at this is the point where you can start really and have a huge design day of all these people who've sat at playgrounds and said, if only.
Yes.
And great ideas out there, and then have the designer begin do their expertise and create a design, at which point you can go to the ground, you know, look through the playground company that best meets what your designs were and start having a conversation with them, because between your landscape architect and the playground people, you're going to start getting a price and you're going to be able to start determining, unfortunately, what you're going to have to call out of there.
Yes.
Because you've created $1 million playground. You're only going to be able to raise $250,000.
Yes.
You start getting a price, you start getting a design, and when you have a design, it's never easy. It becomes easier to go out and raise money.
Right.
Because now you've got this thing. And it's really important to find somebody who will give you a lead gift.
Right.
Because if you can find somebody who's going to give you that first, depending on the size of the playground, $5,000 in American money, or whatever it would be in your country's money amount, then it makes it much easier for people to give.
Yes. Yeah.
On myground.net, I have tried to track as many different types of fundraisers people have done. So people don't have to read some really innovative fundraisers beyond selling bricks, both of which you will probably have to do. But there are a lot of other really interesting other ways that you can raise money as well as awareness for your project.
Great. They're amazing ideas. Thank you for sharing those. And I'm glad that you mentioned your site so that we can go there and be with like-minded people that are thinking of taking that next step and turning their dreams into reality. Typically, parents are used to seeing playgrounds that have metal frames or rubber swings or slides that are all man-made structures. And you mentioned it briefly as part of your dream, but of having a hill with a slide in the middle of it. I was interested to see on your website you mentioned nature playgrounds. Can you tell us what you've seen or you would expect to see in a nature playground?
You would see maybe logs that have been cut up. You're jumping from log to log. There may be a stream going through so that you can actually look into the stream and see if there are fish and do your normal water play. And there might be a mud area. There might be a place to climb trees safely. It's when we envision, so many of us, when our parents go outside and play, there may have been some nature area that out and played, and there may not have been a playground. So it's sort of silly. It's recreating these natural events with real nature so that you're putting, you know, real flowers in and real tactile grasses and mazes and, you know, all sorts of things that are real things that kids always used to play with. We've stopped them from, don't want them to get dirty, or we're so risk-afraid to have children play in those environments. And the reality is, children do much better when they have challenges and take risks. They begin to know what their bodies can do, what their bodies can't do. That sort of leads all the way into adulthood, that if we don't take risks and challenges as a child, we can't take challenges as an employee. And you're not going to be a really great employee for some company if you don't know how to take a risk or take on a huge challenge for a company.
Today, I've been talking to Mara Kaplan about accessible playgrounds and nature playgrounds. You can connect with her on Twitter and Facebook using Let Kids Play. That's all one word. To find out more about her work, see the photos of the nature playgrounds, visit letkidsplay.com. I'll be right back after this short break.
This is Brian Clark Howard, web editor with the Daily Green and co-author of several books on green living, and you're listening to Raising Playful Tots.
Welcome back. Time for the weekly find. This is the part of the show where I highlight a play activity or resource that I have found interesting this week. For those of you that use iTunes to listen to this and other podcasts, you'll be familiar with other types of shows. This week's weekly find is for our listening pleasure. Barefoot Books offers a free podcast of their popular stories and songs. We really like having them while we are on our car journeys and have been known to wait in the car for the ending. You get the same high quality and varied stories from all around the world that you're used to hearing from Barefoot Books, but now you can listen online. Since you've just had screen-free week, some of you are looking at how you can reduce the amount of screen time for your tots with an alternative that holds their attention. Or even if you're just reducing screen time, this is a great substitute to add to your new mix of activities. Search the iTunes store for Barefoot Books Podcast. The Barefoot Books catalog reaches well past the Raising Playful Tots ages, so you should check the story before you listen. Please join me Wednesday, April the 27th, 11 till 12 Eastern Standard Time on Baby and Toddler Instructions, as I talk about turning everyday moments into playful opportunities on Blythe Lipman's show. I interviewed Blythe on show number 55, and I'm excited to be on her show. Would love to hear your views on accessible playgrounds. What are your experiences? To find out links to the articles, websites, and links mentioned in the show, visit the show notes. Go to www.raisingplayfultots.com www.radioclarkhoward.com/57, as that's the number of this show. If you have show ideas or just want to comment about playtime, send your comments to Melitza@raisingplayfultots.com. That's M-E-L-I-T-S-A. Like us on Facebook.com, Raising Playful Tots. You can also leave a review for us on iTunes. Thanks for listening to the show today. You've been listening to Raising Playful Tots, show number 57. Come over and play next week. Until then, find some time for some unplugged play. Join with me each week as we share, learn, and laugh together about making the most of early childhood playtime. Goodbye.